course of study and or stay in Alaska or return to Alaska. This is much more efficient use of our dollars within this program to benefit the goals that we're trying to achieve. Certainly the non-accrual of interest is a nice benefit, but if it goes to those who don't complete their study and to those who don't return to the state, then it just doesn't seem as appropriate as the proposal, the proposed amendment.
I am ready for the question. The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 39, Finance Amended, be returned to second reading for the purposes of an amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
27 yeas, 12 nays.
The bill is before us in second reading or for purposes of an amendment. Mr. Majority Leader?
Before the amendment is moved, I wonder if we could briefly move back up the introduction of guests.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce two constituents of Representatives Collins and Boucher. They're friends of mine in Gallery B, Glenn and Terry Turner.
Further guest reintroduction, Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a guest page who has been working in the legislature for the past couple days, Scott Lyon.
Any further guest reintroduction? Okay, the bill is before us in second reading for the purposes of the new amendment number 5 to be moved. Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Hearing objection, is there any debate on new amendment number 5? Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from Ketchikan mentioned some of the problems during the debate on the motion. I'd like to just bring up a couple of other items on who benefits and who loses on under this proposed amendment. Everyone would be granted the grace period of interest for the period of time they're in school, and of course under the amendment that grace period of interest would not be counted. That applies to everybody, and in lieu of that, but not quite in lieu of that, I might add, we would be in the amendment replacing forgiveness. And who benefits under that? Those people, the 1 in 6 who benefit, are the people who, after they've already been paying 5 years and who happen to be in Alaska, then accrue the benefits of forgiveness. Those benefits only accrue to a relatively small number of people, but the losers are almost everybody on the program who has to pay more monthly repayments because they've not been forgiven this or interest that has accrued during the time they're in school. The figures that we have for the 1 year grace period interest that we are removing on a $20,000 loan, that was $13.33 a month. Obviously, the more years of this grace period that is affected, the higher the monthly repayment program. So I think this only adds to further costs of the program. In addition, I don't think it's fair.
Representative Taylor.
Maybe I'm misinterpreting the thrust of this amendment, and I hope the makers of it will correct me if I'm wrong, but basically I have to disagree with the former speaker from Anchorage in that I believe that what we're really saying here is that 1 out of 6 students who is an Alaskan and returns to Alaska and lives here with us and brings back his educational talents and provides that to us and to the state and so on, that we're going to reward that student by forgiving half of that debt, interest and principal. That the accumulation of interest occurs, but no payments are required under this until such time as the normal payment schedule would begin. Basically, what this amendment is saying is those people who take this subsidized Alaska loan, get an education, and decide to move out of this state and live down south, they're going to have to pay back the full amount of the interest and the principal for the time they had our money. That will leave us with more money to be able to support and subsidize other Alaskan students. In essence, this is the Alaska Hire student amendment that we're addressing here, and I can't imagine how anybody in this body could be opposed to supporting that one out of six students to make sure and give them an incentive, as the speaker from Fairbanks said yesterday. Let's give those young people an incentive to come back to this state as opposed to a penalty. And this is certainly an incentive, so I'll support the amendment.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a quick question. I was wondering if you happen to have, or if the maker of the amendment happens to have figures regarding the level of payment that would be required under the amendment versus without the amendment.
Representative Frank.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have figures. I think that some of the members up here that worked on the bill might be able to answer that question in a very specific instance better than I can. But Representative from Valdez asked me during the at-ease how much interest would accrue on this during the life of the loan, during the life of the period when a student was a student going to school. If you took a typical student, four-year student, maybe that's not a typical student, but if you did take a four-year student and they borrowed $6,000, they would be borrowing $24,000. And if you took the 8% interest and brought all and multiplied it out, which I just did, you come up with $4,800 in additional interest that they would have to pay. Okay. Now, if you took that $4,800 and compared it to the $24,000 that they borrowed, you can see that it's less than 20% of the amount that they borrowed. So it shouldn't have greater than a 20% increase in their payments. And I think it would be certainly bearable.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 5? Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition of the amendment. I think the effect of this amendment takes us back to a period of time when the coined phrase to kick around was ecology. And one of the first laws of ecology we learned was there's no such thing as a free lunch. And I don't think there's an Alaskan out here who's looking for a free lunch. And if there's anyone who supports public education and access to public education or any kind of education, that person is not for that, no person is for that kind of situation any more than I. I believe in having money available for education, and if we have to keep the interest rate as low as possible. But I think that students are willing to pay their own way. And to encourage people to stand in line for a free lunch. And again, this is not a popular place to be. Like I say, if everybody could be afforded a grant to continue their education, I would be the first in line to do that. But I think that it's important that we have the fund protected so that over the very long term, we have young Alaskans who are who have the money available to them to get that education. In this business, I'm learning that you can stand in line to be in a position, but before long you're standing in line trying to posture. And I think the posture in this instance should be that we Alaskans are willing to pay. We've asked everyone to sacrifice this year, and I think that this is not a great sacrifice for students, but I would speak against the amendment.
Any further debate? Ready for Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't support the amendment either, and mainly because it further hurts students at the lower end of the scale. It hurts low-income students in particular. And the only way that I would just recommend that we divide the question, but if we don't divide it, I'm totally against the amendment. Thank you.
Any further debate? did the representative ask for a division or just recommend that there be a division of the question? Okay, which recommendation? Any further debate? You're ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 5 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk totaled the board.
14 yeas, 25 nays.
Amendment number 5, the new amendment number 5 has failed adoption. The bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move to move and ask unanimous consent to return to second reading for the purposes of specific amendment, the old amendment number 5.
Hearing objection, just a little bit of latitude to the representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment is very similar to the amendment we addressed yesterday, only the numbers are halves. It would simply reduce the forgiveness program by one half so that only 25% of the loan would be forgiven, spread out in the same formula that it currently is, 5% a year, so that in the sixth year, 25% would be forgiven.
For the members' information, it's the Donnelly Amendment, very obviously, number 5, which now would be number 6.
That amendment on the clerk's desk.
That amendment is on the clerk's desk. It should be on all members' desks. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 39, Finance Amendment, be returned to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, that amendment being number 6? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The chair wishes to change his vote from nay to yea. Representative Swackheimer.
Yes.
From nay to yea. Representative Davidson.
Nay to yea.
From nay to yea. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk tabulate the board.
32 yeas, 7 nays.
The bill is back before us in second reading. Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move amendment number 5.
Hearing objection, Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's...
It is amendment 6 now.
Okay, I'd move amendment number 6.
Still hearing objection.
Mr. Speaker, the amendment's very self-explanatory. It simply reduces, instead of eliminating the forgiveness, it would reduce it by one half so that it would, all the same policy reasons apply, simply cut down. It's a form of slowly reducing the negative impact upon our students and maintaining all those good public policy reasons that the program was adopted for in the first place.
Any further debate? Representative Kopanen.
Yes, I would like to declare my support for the amendment. I'd like to state that I don't consider it to be a free lunch or a subsidy, but an attempt to lure back to Alaska people who have completed their training and to give them that edge in setting up whatever profession, trade, or business they wish to provide those of us by reducing the debt burden in the first few years when they are completing school and have the additional burden of establishing themselves economically in Alaska. I think that this is another economic incentive that we can provide to build a sound economy in the state. Thank you.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I oppose the amendment for all the same reasons. In addition, though, it's real easy to try to compromise some of these sticky things, and I continue to sit here last week or so thinking that
somehow or another we have to convince ourselves that times have changed, that we no longer can afford to do all the things we'd like to do in the same manner, and that this is one of those situations. Things aren't going to get any better financially for the state. We can water some of these things down and talk about easing the burden. Some programs, that makes sense. This isn't one of those programs. This isn't what I would consider a burdensome thing. When you think about, again, and I, there seems to be still some confusion as to when people receive forgiveness. It follows 5 years. It's not at the initial period of time when people are struggling to establish themselves and repay their student loans. They reap the benefit after they have become whatever they are trained to become after receiving a college education, that the benefit comes when their earning power is actually maximized. As for whether this program works, there is no hard evidence to say that it works. And I think it was the speaker in previous day's debate from Fairbanks who talked about the, forgot what the cliche was called, but the pigeon homing syndrome or something, where people tend to stay around the place where they either they grew up or in this case, where they go to school. We lose a lot of kids, Alaskan kids, that go to school. We have a forgiveness program in place. We still lose a lot of people that go away to school and stay away. I just don't think that there's any evidence that the program really works, and frankly, I think we've come to that juncture when we can't afford it.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to speak in opposition to the amendment also for a lot of the same reasons as the prior speaker. I think there's a time when we have to get some stability and certainty in here, and this is one of those programs, I think, where you have to say, where are we going in the long haul? And I think if we kind of, the old cliche, bite the bullet now and get this established, we can be there. We have the non-accrual of interest, and that'll be the major subsidy there is, and then the default rate, which is the other subsidy, which we can work on, and that's the end of it. If we take this to 25% now, when the going gets tough down the road, well, then we got to move again, and all of a sudden, we instead of having two classes of loans out there, we got three classes of loans. I think it's time to take one giant step forward here and just take the forgiveness out so we can maintain the volume of dollars in the loan program and maintain the volume of dollars' ability to lend out to the individuals. We don't have to cut that amount down. We don't have to put it on a needs basis. This program will work, but the effect of this amendment is to take more subsidy from the general fund down the road to make this work, and it'll be less dollars volume in the program. And I would oppose the amendment.
Representative Wallace, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support the amendment, not on the basis of whether or not students come back to the state, because you'll find that in rural Alaska, we all come back. But I support it because right now, under the proposed language in the bill, you would have two classes of students. You would have those students that get the 50% credit, and then you'd have those students that don't get anything at all. And it's quite unfair to them, and especially when we haven't had the input, the public testimony from the students on what is happening to them. I don't even think that they know what's going on and what we're doing here in Juneau. If we were near one of the major campuses and had more input from them, I'd appreciate it a lot more. I'd appreciate the time that we could take during an interim to hear from them and to hear their recommendations. We have people calling from our district all the time on budget cuts that are affecting them, but they never totally say, you know, if you do that, we're going to vote against you. What they say instead is to give some recommendation on how to make a fair and equitable cut. And I think going to the students, those talented young people, we could find a solution to this. It's been said that there things aren't going to get financially better for the state. Well, taking out bonds, you have to pay interest, and down the long run, that's going to cost. But my main problem if we don't adopt this amendment, is the fact that you're going to have two classes of students out there. And lucky for you, if you signed on a contract with the state for a student loan before this year, and if you didn't, it's quite unfair and poor you. Thank you.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can we have a brief please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we're in second reading with amendment number 6 before us under debate. Representative Zawacki.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I wanted to address the comments that the last speaker just made. Several months ago, or the early part of the session, there was a conference down here in Juneau that was attended by the student councils of all of the community colleges and universities. There were probably 35 to 40 of those student council officer representatives from the university and community colleges. It was interesting, almost 80% to 85% of those students that said one thing that all of the students through those educational entities would be willing to give up was the forgiveness clause and any benefits of that, as long as those monies would go to help additional students get money for their further education. They didn't question where those students went. They were hoping to keep the allocation at the present level. But it was surprising. Yes, there was input taken, and unfortunately there were a lot of legislators that were invited to that three-day conference, and very few of them did attend, because if they would have, they would have heard that overwhelmingly those students said we would rather give up the forgiveness clause to make sure that students got those loans so they could be educated. And I think the speaker from Mountain View and Anchorage mentioned that there's something about $2 million or so that would be generated if the forgiveness clause was allowed. You know, if we talk about the $5,000 or so dollars that we're talking about, almost 400 students can get loans on an annual basis. I think maybe that's what we should be looking at.
Any further debate on Amendment 6? Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, let me correct the record here. I'm familiar with this meeting that the gentleman is speaking of, but those students were giving an alternative at that meeting. If you want a program, then give up the forgiveness clause. And they made that recommendation based upon that. It was given as if there were no alternatives. And so I object to using that as a basis for giving up the forgiveness. The forgiveness, in my opinion, is still a good idea, and we should support this amendment.
Representative Kopanen.
We revert to introduction of guests.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
In Gallery B, I have a constituent, Dr. Tsuyin Akasofu, who is the director of the Geophysical Institute, and who I believe, if I remember correctly, was the first PhD graduate in the University of Alaska many years ago.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Davis.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I also have a distinguished guest in Gallery B. I'd like to like for the body to welcome Merritt Helfert.
Further guests for introduction? Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, one of our Representative Gruenberg and myself, two assembly persons on the Anchorage Assembly, Jim Kubitz. And also in Gallery B, Mr. Speaker, from the Anchorage Neighborhood Housing Services in Anchorage, Cynthia Parker.
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back to debate on Amendment Number 6. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 6 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board? 68. Amendment number 6 has failed adoption. The bill is back before us in third reading. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent to go up the calendar to excused absences.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Herman be excused from the call of the House today at 2 p.m. for medical reasons.
Okay. Hearing no objections, Representative Herman is excused from the call of the House. Representative Wallace.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, back to the bill before us. First, I'd just like to say, you know, thank you to those people who have worked hard on this. I know that they've had to make a lot of hard decisions, and I appreciate that. However, I would like to address District 24 and rural Alaska's concern with this bill and why I'll vote against it. Rural Alaska has a 97% unemployment rate, at least in District 24, in the 42 communities there. What jobs are available in rural Alaska and in the interior, especially in those communities along the rivers of the Kuskokwim, the Koyukuk River, and the Yukon River? There are no jobs. There might perhaps be a part-time post office job or part-time school district jobs. Imagine the pressure on those students who select education, be it college or vocational school, when they know that there are no jobs available at home to pay for their loans, but yet feel a real desire for education and supposedly have a right to higher education. I applaud their courage to take this risk. Imagine the constant worry upon their about finances. The student's loan bill does not accommodate these Alaskan students from communities without a cash economy. And I'm talking poor by cash economic terms, because we in rural Alaska are rich in family, we're rich in friends, we're rich in culture, and we're rich in faith. This bill is going to hurt students at the lower end of our economic scale. Without setting aside a portion of the program for low-income students, without a forgiveness clause, without a needs-based program, I cannot support the student loans bill. What is the philosophy behind low-income loans and financial aid? The philosophy is to assist those families who need a higher education but cannot afford it. This is really an equal access issue, equal access to education. If low-income people cannot afford a higher education, they should still be able to obtain one through financial support. Mr. Speaker, this bill has been referred to as Alaska's Middle Class Education Loans Program. These proposed changes would make it that much more inaccessible to those Alaskans who need it the most. I can't in good conscience vote to support such a state policy or such a state law. These students without economic resources deserve the opportunity to higher education.
Any further debate upon the bill before us? Are you ready for the question? Representative Frank.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker. Can we have a brief at ease, please? Thank you.
Would the House please stand at ease? The House come back to order. Before the at ease, we have the bill before us in third reading and under debate. Are you ready for the question? The call of the House has not been satisfied. Is there any debate? Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Now that we're in order, I understand Representative Frank wants to withdraw his call of the House. Are you ready for the question? The question is, Shall committee substitute for House Bill 39, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk lock the board. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tabulate the board?
27 yeas, 10 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 39, Finance Amendment, has passed the House in reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the final passage on reconsideration of Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 39 amended be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Okay. Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. We're still under unfinished business. Is there any further unfinished business to come before this body? Mr. Majority Leader, House, please stand at ease. For the at ease, we're in unfinished business. Last call for unfinished business. Announcements of standing committees or special committees. Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, confirmation hearings for the Board of Marine Pilot candidate, Mr. Michael Waddell, will be held on Friday, May 8th during the House Transportation Committee meeting. The House Transportation Committee meets at 1:30 p.m. in room 17. I didn't try to usurp the finance officer's job.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a special meeting of the State Affairs Committee tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. And we will be taking up the procurement bill. I would welcome any members of the House who are interested in the procurement bill to join us in room 101 at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. I'd like to try and finish our work on that bill tomorrow. Thank you.
The chair highly recommends that meeting for some of you who are concerned. Representative Ellis, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House HES Committee will hear bills tomorrow at 8:30 a.m., bills held over previously, including House Bill 205, Occupational and Physical Therapists, House Bill 201, Hazardous Painting Certification, and House Bill 80, Part-Time Teachers.
Representative Boucher, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Special Committee on Telecommunication work session this afternoon is canceled, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Sund.
Speaker, House Judiciary Committee is going to convene upon the adjournment of this body here just so we can refresh our memory with the bills we have and see if we can't move one or two things.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Finance will start immediately at adjournment.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Rules Committee will be taking up committee substitute for House Bill 3. An act relating to private sale of consignment of artworks tomorrow morning at the Rules Committee meeting at 8 o'clock in the Speaker's chamber.
Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Labor and Commerce Committee will begin at 2:30 today, and I anticipate that House Bill 236 relating to state lottery will be held over till tomorrow at 4:30 in the Labor and Commerce Room.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Rail Belt Democrats will meet Friday noon, Labor and Commerce Committee room.
Okay. Any further general announcements? Special orders? Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request the privilege of the floor to speak on a proposed federal action.
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday I introduced House Joint Resolution 35 relating to the use of state airports for plutonium shipments under a proposed United States agreement with Japan. And this resolution is very similar to Senate Joint Resolution 42, which had been introduced in the other body, currently sits in the Senate State Affairs Committee. With passage of this resolution, the legislature would oppose a 30-year agreement that is currently being negotiated between the United States and Japan for the shipment of plutonium. Japan is currently developing a nuclear reactor industry, which is using plutonium as a fuel, and that nation does not have the facilities to reprocess other nuclear fuels into plutonium, so they intend to use European reprocessors. The newly reprocessed plutonium would then be flown via a polar route from Europe to Japan, necessitating refueling stops here in Alaska. And I'm a person who's been an advocate of increased flights through the state of Alaska, international trade. But with this kind of overflight, there's a serious problem. The problem has to do with shipping casks for the plutonium. The shipments I'm speaking of will occur as often as every 2 weeks, beginning in the early 1990s under the proposed agreement. The plutonium will be weapons-grade plutonium and will be shipped in lots of 500 to 600 pounds each, which is enough material to build 40 bombs of the size dropped on Nagasaki during World War II. And as I said, the problem is with the shipping cask. Essentially, there has not been one developed that is economical enough or safe enough to ship plutonium. The cask proposed for shipment has failed to pass a test that simulated an airplane crash. As you know, Mr. Speaker, plutonium is a highly radioactive, extremely toxic, and an element with an extremely long life. And it's the primary ingredient in the construction of nuclear weapons. The plutonium proposed for shipment through Alaskan airports would be in the form of powder, plutonium oxide, which if released in the air could cause a tremendous risk to the health and safety of Alaska citizens. The resolution requests simply that Governor Cooper enforce current Alaska law, AS 18.45.027, which expressly prohibits the transportation of used reactor fuel through the state of Alaska. Again, that's current state law. For members' information, House Joint Resolution 35 is scheduled for a hearing in the HES Committee on Tuesday, May 12th, and I'd welcome any co-sponsors. Thank you.
Any further special orders? Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like the privilege of the floor to discuss a court decision.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Mr. Speaker, the Supreme Court last evening issued a judgment ratifying and actually expanding the judgment made by Judge Blair in Fairbanks on the unconstitutionality of a statute which allowed the governors Cooper and Sheffield to issue administrative orders 90 and 91. I think we need to be aware of that and to realize what that means. But before I get into the meaning of it, I'd have to forgive me for saying that this was brought to the attention of the majority of this group over the summer. I personally gathered signatures requesting the call of a special session to deal with this issue. It was ignored. And as a consequence, this body is has been accused, according to the words of Judge Blair, of legislative abdication. I consider it an abrogation of duty. He calls it an abdication. But in any event, it was irresponsible, and we're being called to task for it. And I hope it doesn't happen again. I'm afraid that the way things are going this year, we may be doing a little more abdication before we get out of here. But the one point that is significant, I believe, is that the Supreme Court order expanded the judge's ruling so that it included not only the Fairbanks monies, which was the original subject of the lawsuit, but all questions which were dealt with in those administrative orders, including the capital budget. Now, this body did pass House Bill 113, which dealt with most of that, but I want the members to realize that House Bill 113 did not deal with the $50 million that we appropriated for Bradley Lake from the general fund last year. And for all the members who refused to give an effective date on Senate Bill 159, thus having it returned to Rules Committee, congratulations, you saved Rail Belt Energy Fund $50 million. Thank you.
Representative Copeland.
Request permission to speak on retirement.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, we passed under special orders four citations honoring four retiring professors at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. All are members of the engineering department. They are not necessarily retiring because they have all suddenly or simultaneously reached the age of wisdom and sufficient income to do so. Most of them are retiring to the early retirement program and similar matters. This is not the only department that is having as many as four, five, six members retiring because of cuts in program. In fact, I understand the math department that all of the tenured professors at this point are contemplating either early retirement or taking retirement. But the impact of the program has been more severe at the senior college level, and this is true of all three campuses, than at the community college. It's one of the reasons that I voted the way I did on the resolution the other day. But I'd like to review the people. Tom Roberts. Tom was born and brought up in Livengood, gold mining town north of Fairbanks, son of Tom and Luella Roberts. He became a professor of physics and electrical engineering and taught at the university from 1966 in quantum mechanics, engineering physics, classical mechanics, electronics. He did considerable research on esoteric matters such as plasma properties, meteor burst communications, and the representative from the Anchorage, who's interested in telecommunications, knows about meteor burst communications. This is taking, making use of bouncing signals off meteors coming into the atmosphere, and represents a very esoteric and high-tech application. There are a number of other areas where Professor Roberts worked. He is leaving to work with NERCO Minerals, which is also leaving Alaska and going to Vancouver, Washington, but is a company engaged in mineral research in Alaska. Bill Mendenhall, some of my Republican colleagues will know Bill Mendenhall. He is a constituent of mine, and I have long admired his work in engineering, aerial surveying, the like, even though I think that he and I are probably as far apart, or maybe even further apart in politics than the Honorable Minority Leader and myself. Nevertheless, I have enjoyed knowing Bill and his wife Nancy for many years, and is one of the people who applied aerial surveying and photogrammetry to Alaska. And he, however, fortunately, will be remaining and going into private business in Alaska, as will John Hilbert, who has worked in this area in communications engineering. And I think, again, the representative from Anchorage knows John Hilbert because he was one of the people who assisted in formation of the rural telecommunications system that we have in Alaska, as did Robert Merritt, who is also retiring after having worked in a number of areas, including the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. I think the point in this area, and I can think of others like Tom Head, who is going to the National Science Foundation to work in computer intelligence, the problem is that we have achieved a certain, shall we say, critical mass in our university system on one or two campuses, but we are in danger of losing it. I think we are on the edge at this point and must continue to do what we can to maintain the system. And I say maintain, not expand, not enrich it. I think one of the problems was when we had a lot of wealth coming in, we saw endless possibilities and did not look at the degree to which we had to concentrate those resources to make the best use of them. We tended to dissipate them, dissipate our efforts, and it reminds me again that the rarest of resources are human time and intelligence, not money. Money is only a lubricant. Human brains and human time have to be organized to make the best use of those, and I think probably we should look at that too as a lesson, and therefore I will conclude my special orders.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I could move back up to announcements briefly.
Are there any objections? Go ahead.
I'd like to announce I'm calling a special Republican Insular Caucus in the lounge just as soon as we're over here. That's Republicans who live on islands in Alaska.
Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, I'd request the privilege of the floor to speak on Alaskan workers and Alaska history.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Labor and Commerce Committee, for the past few weeks, we've been working on a bill relating to the number of hours a company can require a miner or a worker to work underground in a mine. And Mr. Speaker, I've been greatly troubled by this bill, and I've been doing some studying. And last night I read a history book about the glory days of hard rock mining in Juneau. And I'd like to share a little of what I learned last night with other members of this body. Mr. Speaker, over 300 miners lost their lives during the hard rock
mining era here. And more important than that, Mr. Speaker, it wasn't until they had unionization that for the first time the AJ Mining Company developed and implemented a safety program to protect workers in underground mine shafts. And Mr. Speaker, I'd like this body to think about those men for a moment. I'd like to consider their contribution to our great state, and I'd like us to consider our obligation to those people that lost their lives. In those days, Mr. Speaker, government rarely intervened and with business, especially mining, and when they did, it was on the side of the company against the workers, just like this government is being asked to do today. Mr. Speaker, American workers fought long and hard for an eight-hour day. Alaskan miners gave their lives in a struggle to gain a fair wage and the right to collective bargain and the right to be safe in their workplace. Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to buy into the myth that a major international corporation, multinational corporation, somehow needs our state's protection against the abuses of workers organizing for safe working conditions and decent wage. That's what who we're talking about here, Mr. Speaker. It's not little old Greens Creek Mining Company. It's really the multinational corporation behind Greens Creek that's financing this. And I'm going to put my efforts and my vote behind laws designed to help workers help themselves. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to think a lot about the men and women I read about last night. And I ask that each member of this body think about them also. Thank you.
Any further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Yes. Just first, I'd like to remind the members to please retain their bill packets on House Bill 99, that's the Legislative Research Division, and secondly, on Senate Bill 107, that's the Revisor's Statute. And then I would request privilege of the floor to speak briefly concerning an act. Took with respect to Bradley Lake.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you. I'd just like to respond very briefly to the distinguished minority leader's comments concerning the bill and the effective date clause with respect to Bradley Lake. Mr. Speaker, that bill and that project mean a lot of jobs for a lot of people. It's a responsible project, and it's something that we all need, and the people who want to see the economy moving again should be supportive of that. It also represents an attempt to act responsibly. It definitely is a rail belt energy project, and it's appropriate that that particular project be paid out of that particular fund. It doesn't do any good if we go down economically with that particular fund socked away for a project that's clearly within that. That was responsible legislation. And I think that I haven't read the Supreme Court opinion on the subject that came out yesterday. I'll be happy to. But if the court and our people in our state are concerned about the legislature acting responsibly, I think that the passage of that effective date clause would indeed have been a responsible action. And the overwhelming majority of the members, the number of members who did support that, and the closeness of that vote showed that most of us do support responsible state action.
Any further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent. The body stand in adjournment until 10 tomorrow.
10 tomorrow.